Narayanam Namaskritya Naram Cheva Narottamam Devim Saraswatim Vyasam Tato Jayam Udirayat. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 21, Chapter entitled Explanation of the Vedic Path. We'll read next, text 12, 13, and 14. Danya Daru Asti Tantunam Rasa Taijasa Chamanam Kala Vayu Agni Mrit Toyai Pativanam Yutai, Danya Davasti Tantunam, Rasa Taijasa Chamanam, Kalavai Vagni Mrit Toyai. Ativanam yutayutai Danya Davasti Tantunam Rasatai Jasa Chamanam Kalavai Bhagni Mrit Toyai Ativanam yutayutai. Danya of grains. Daru of wood. In the form of both ordinary objects and sacred utensils. Asti bone. Such as elephant tusks. Dantunam and thread. Rasa of liquids. Oil, ghee, etc. Taijasa, fiery objects. Gold, etc. Chamanam and skins. Kala, by time. Vayu, by air. Agni, by fire. Mrit, by earth. Toyai, and by water. Ativanam, also of earthen objects. Such as chariot wheels, mud pots, bricks, etc. Yuta, in combination. Ayutai, or separately. Translation and purport by the followers of Srila Prabhupada. Various objects such as grains, wooden utensils, things made of bone, thread, liquids, objects derived from fire, skins and earthly objects are all purified by time, by the wind, by fire, by earth and by water, either separately or in combination. Translation responsibly. Various objects such as grains, wooden utensils, things made of bone, thread, liquid, objects derived from fire. Skins and earthly objects. are all purified by time.
By the wind,
by fire,
by earth and by water,
either separately or in combination. Purport. The word kala or time is mentioned here since all purificatory processes take place within time. Text 13. A particular purifying agent is considered appropriate when its application removes the bad odor or dirty covering of some contaminated object and makes it resume its original nature. Purport. Furniture, kitchen utensils, clothing and other objects are purified by application of abrasion, alkali, acid, water and so on. One thereby removes the bad fragrance or impure coating of such objects, restoring them to their original clean appearance. Just give me some paper towel. Text 14. The self can be cleansed by bathing, charity, austerity, age, personal strength, purificatory rituals, prescribed duties, and above all by remembrance of me. The Brahmana and other twice-born men should be duly purified before performing their specific activities. Purport. The word avasta indicates that when boys and girls are young, they are kept pure by youthful innocence, and that as they grow up, they are kept pure through proper education and engagement. By one's individual potency, one should avoid sinful activities and the association of those inclined towards sense gratification. The word karma here refers to prescribed duties, such as worshipping the spiritual master and the deity, chanting the Gayatri Mantra 3 times daily, and accepting spiritual initiation. The prescribed duties of the Varnashram system automatically purify one from the covering of false ego by dovetailing one's bodily designation in appropriate religious activities. There are specific duties for Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Sudras, Brahmacharis, Grihasthas, Vanaprasthas, and Sannyasis, as described previously in this canto by the Lord himself. The most significant word here is Mat Smritya, by remembrance of me. Ultimately, one cannot avoid the infection of illusion through any process except Krishna consciousness. The three modes of nature perpetually interact, and one must sometimes fall into the mode of ignorance and sometimes rise to the mode of goodness, uselessly rotating within the kingdom of illusion. But by Krishna consciousness, remembrance of the personality of Godhead, one can actually uproot one's tendency to act against the will of the Absolute Truth. Then one becomes freed from the clutches of Maya and goes back home, back to Godhead. As stated in the Garuda Purana, Apavitra, Pavitra Va, Savava, Savavastam, Gatobi Va, Yasmaret, Pundarika, Sham, Savayavyantaraha, Suchi. Whether one is pure or contaminated, and regardless of one's external situation, simply by remembering the lotus-eyed personality of Godhead, one can internally and externally cleanse one's existence. Lord Chaitanya recommended that we constantly remember the Supreme Lord by chanting his holy names. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. This sublime process is essential for every human actually desirous of purifying his existence. Omigyan Tivanandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshuan Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Sri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Swabhadantikam Vansha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha. Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram. Ram Ram Hare. So the whole spiritual world is constituted of Vishuddha Sattva. Vishuddha means pure. Shuddha Sattva means goodness. So Vishuddha Sattva means purified goodness or pure goodness. So it describes in the spiritual world everything is constituted of pure goodness. There is no contamination of the modes of material nature. There is no Mishra Sattva or mixture of the other modes. In this material world, this is described in the beginning of the Harinam Chintamani by Haridas Thakur, that in the material world we have Mishra Sattva, which means the mode of goodness in this material world is Mishra, which means it is always mixed to some degree with passion and ignorance. It is not pure. It is not unalloyed pure goodness. Whereas in the spiritual world we have Vishuddha Sattva, which means purified goodness, which is free from the contamination of Rajagun and Tamagun. Rajagun means nothing in the spiritual world has a beginning, because there is no Rajagun. Rajagun means creation, the creative impetus. When Lord Brahma creates this universe, then he uses Rajagun to create. When you want to do something or get something started, you need to use Rajagun. As devotees, we have to be careful not to become under the influence or control of Rajagun, even though sometimes we have to use it like an instrument to do some service. Just like when in the second canto of the Bhagavatam, when Lord Brahma begins to create the universe, he prays to the Lord, please do not let me become influenced or under the control of Rajagun. So sometimes, like, you need to cook, so you pick up the spoon and then you begin to move all the ingredients within the pot. So it's an instrument, right? So similarly, sometimes you have to use Rajagun or the mode of passion in order to get the service happening, but not that you become controlled by Rajagun or totally under the influence of Rajagun. Sometimes we have to use Tamagun for our service, which means we have to take rest. At night time we take rest, so we go to sleep. That's Tamagun, right? But we're using that for our service to Krishna. Krishna says, Bhagavad Gita, don't sleep too much, don't sleep too little. Right? So you don't sleep too much. Whatever is necessary so you can continue your service. So use Tamagun in the service of Krishna. Not that you become controlled by Tamagun. Not that you become controlled by Rajagun. So in the spiritual world there is no Rajagun, there is no Tamagun. Rajagun means there is no beginning for anything. Tamagun means nothing deteriorates, nothing becomes contaminated, and nothing finishes. That's the difference. Spiritual world is Shuddha Sattva. Shuddha Sattva means no beginning to the pastimes. Pastimes have a beginning and they have an end, but then next day then pastimes continue. And there is no deterioration within the spiritual world. Nothing deteriorates. No one gets old. Birth, death, old age, disease are all conspicuous by their absence. There is no old age. No one gets old. Krishna is Navayovana. Navayovana means he is Brajakishore. In Vrindavan he is always Kaishora, which means he never goes past the age of 16. You don't see any pictures of Krishna old. When he was on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, which means he would have been on the earth for about 100 years when the battle was fought, then he looked like he was 25. He never goes past that age. That is Krishna. Because the spiritual world, Krishna is Vishuddha Sattva. He is personified pure goodness. Everything in the spiritual world is an extension of his energy. It is also pure goodness. So because everything in the spiritual world is pure goodness, there's no mode of ignorance. Mode of ignorance means there's no contamination. Right? Nothing is dirty. Nothing is contaminated. Nothing is impure. Everything is pavitra. which means everything in the spiritual world is pure. Srila Prabhupada says that if you come into a place in this material world, if you come into a place, if you walk into a room, and that room is dirty and unclean and untidy, and if you are not affected by that, he said, then you are also in tamaguna. Just like if we do an excursion, if we do a class field trip, if we all get up now and go to everyone's home to inspect their house, and we all walk in and we see, what is the status of your bedroom? What is the status of your living quarters? Is it messy? Hands up if you would be happy for all the devotees to walk in there right now. My hands are going up slowly. Is that okay? More hands are going up. So that should be spiritual life means spiritual life is effectively practiced in the mode of goodness. Prabhupada explains this in many places in his books. In the beginning of the Nectar of Instruction, if you read the introduction to the Nectar of Instruction, if you read the second chapter of the first canto of the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada explains to us, because we have to understand the science of bhakti yoga. We have to understand how to make advancement in Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada says in the introduction of the Nectar of Instruction, he says that the Nectar of Instruction is meant to bring one from the mode of ignorance to the mode of passion to the mode of goodness. Because from the mode of goodness, then you can enter into Vishuddha Sattva, or pure goodness. You can't enter into pure goodness from the mode of ignorance or the mode of passion. It is not possible. The Acharyas comment in the Bhagavatam, they say that the mode of goodness in this world is very similar to the mode of pure goodness. It is similar, very similar. If you look at the two of them, they're very similar. If you look at someone who's in pure goodness, like Srila Prabhupada, and you look at someone who's in the mode of goodness, like the many people in the mode of goodness, you go to India and meet many gentlemen and ladies who are in the mode of goodness, very similar. Right? Of course, one is ultimately purified, but very similar in nature. So in order to progress in Krishna consciousness, you have to come into the mode of goodness first, and then practice your bhakti in the mode of goodness. That will lead you to purified goodness. Prabhupada said it is like a springboard to purified goodness. So if you enter into a place in this world and you're not affected by it, if you see it is dirty, it is untidy, it is contaminated, and you are not affected, Prabhupada says, then you are in tamaguna. And it's very difficult to advance in Krishna consciousness when you're in tamaguna. What are the symptoms of tamaguna? Krishna speaks in the Bhagavad Gita. What is mode of ignorance? Sleep, laziness, madness, right? Indolence, right? Procrastination. This is mode of ignorance, tamaguna, like that. Just like in Bhagavatam class, if you try to hear the Bhagavatam in tamaguna, then what will happen? You know, sometimes you're giving class and someone's looking at you and they go, no one's doing it today, which is good. You cannot practice devotional service in tamaguna. It's not effective. You can practice if you like, you can experiment and try sleeping in the Bhagavatam class, but you don't make much advancement. Actually, you offend the deities. It's an offence to fall asleep in front of the deities. It's an offence to fall asleep when the Bhagavatam is being recited, actually. It's an offence to fall asleep in front of the spiritual master. An offence to fall asleep in front of the devotees. It's an offence. It's aparad, like that. So, in order to practice spiritual life, you have to practice in the mode of goodness. Now, in the spiritual world, everything is constituted of the mode of pure goodness, which means Vishuddha Sattva. Everything is pure goodness, which means nothing is unclean in the spiritual world. Everything is pure. Although it describes in the third canto of the Bhagavatam, when the four Kumaras go to Vaikuntha, it describes what it's like in the spiritual world, what it's like in Vaikuntha. It describes that the devotees there are cleaning. Right? All the devotees are clean. They're clean by Kunta, keeping the spiritual world nice and clean. Just like we clean the temple every day. Keep the temple nice and clean. So in the spiritual world, they're cleaning Vaikuntha, the spiritual world. But then Prabhupada points out in the purport, there's no dust there. There's nothing to clean. They're just doing some service for Krishna. They're just trying to make Lord Narayan happy. So they're cleaning everything and making everything nice. But it's already clean. That's what it means, Vishuddha Sattva. There's no contamination in the spiritual world. It's already cleaned. It's already done. Everything is clean. Perpetually, eternally. Nothing ever becomes contaminated. But still the devotees do some service to please the Lord. So, we can understand that if you examine the pastimes of Krishna, and if you examine the description of the spiritual world is immaculately clean. Immaculately clean. Right? Therefore, we should understand this is the nature of spirit as opposed to matter. Matter over time, if you just leave something over time, it will degrade in the material world. It will become contaminated. It will become impure. It will become unclean. That's the nature of the spirit of the material world. In the spiritual world, that does not happen. So therefore, Prabhupada taught us that the Krishna consciousness movement is meant to create a revolution in cleanliness. The Hare Krishnas are meant to be famous for being clean. And we do have that reputation to a large degree. People often say, and I know people have said to me many times over the years, people have said, you people are always very clean in appearance. You should see a devotee clean and pukka. Devotees should be clean, they should be well presented, well dressed. You ever see any pictures of Prabhupada where he's not presentable? Look at him right now. Does he look presentable? That's Prabhupada. He's our founder Acharya. Not opulent, not materialistic, not absorbed in fashion or all of these things. You know, Prabhupada is not like that. But at the same time, he is clean. He is presentable. He's pukka. Right? And he expected the same of his disciples. Right? And his followers. All of us are meant to be followers of Prabhupada. So we should be as Prabhupada was. Right? So when you go into public, the devotees should be well presented. Just like, you know, when Indrajumna Swami comes and he does these Harinams all around the place. Right? Big Harinam programs. Very, very well organized programs. Right? All the Madhijis have to wear silk saris. Isn't it? Is that the standard? Right? They wear silk saris. Right? And they put flowers in their hair. And everything like that. And gopi dots. Like that. So they dress very nicely. Very well presented. In the mode of goodness. So when people see, they will naturally be attracted. They will think, oh, these people are very clean. These people are very pure. These people are very cultured. This is cultured civilization. Actually, Srila Prabhupada explains that maybe 100 years ago in India, especially in the south of India, a gentleman would not leave his house. You know, one of the higher classes, like Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, but the higher classes, would not leave the house without wearing a turban. That was the culture. People wore turbans. And that, because it looks very cultured, looks very... you see someone wearing a turban, it's very cultured. Right? It's in the mode of goodness. Right? It's a very respectable... You offer this person respect. Right? He's a respectable, clean, pious entity. Like that. So there are reasons in the Vedic culture why these things are practiced. So, in the Krishna consciousness movement, then we are meant to follow what is done in the spiritual world. In other words, cleanliness must be there, and culture must be there, and there must be proper following of etiquette. All these things are there. And it's interesting because when you read in Krishna's pastimes, in the Ashtakaliya Lila, if you read the pastimes of Krishna, like the details of his pastimes, which are given in Govinda Lila Mrita, which are given in Krishna Bhavana Mrita by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, where they go into the minute details of Krishna's pastimes in the spiritual world. Now, it's very interesting because you read, when Krishna finishes his meal, what does he do? Anyone know Krishna? What does he do? After he finishes his prasad, what does he do?
Clean his mouth.
Clean his mouth and? Feet, yeah, and his hands. Right? Krishna washes his hands, his feet, and his mouth. Right? After prasad. Now, why does he do that? Right? He doesn't have to. Is he contaminated? He's this personified Shuddha Sattva, his pure goodness. How can he be contaminated? What is contaminated? He puts his hand in his mouth. His mouth is pure spiritual bliss. So what's contaminated? There is no contamination. What is done? But still, because Krishna is cultured, because Krishna is suci, because Krishna is pavitra, because he follows etiquette, Vedic etiquette, then he finishes, washes his hands, washes his mouth, washes his feet, dries, and then afterwards the devotees bring him Gandha, which means sandalwood, pulp, and Krishna, then he rubs some on his hands, right? Very cooling, very refreshing, right? Takes some tambula, like that, lies down maybe a few minutes, like that. Follows all these etiquettes, all this culture. This is Krishna. So this is meant to be what the devotees are following here in the material world. We're meant to be clean, right? When Krishna finishes taking prasad, he washes his hands. He washes his mouth, right? He washes his feet, which we don't always do because, like, you don't wash your feet in this weather because it's too cold. But in Vrindavan, usually it's warm, so then you wash your feet afterwards, right? So Krishna follows these things. Even though he is pure spiritual bliss, even though he is in the spiritual world and there is no contamination, but still he does all these things. So then we are meant to also follow. So Prabhupada said the Krishna consciousness movement is meant to bring about a revolution in cleanliness. Devotees are meant to be clean in their appearance, in their personal living space where they live. Everything the devotees do, they're meant to be clean. They're meant to follow these rules and regulations. Mm. Now, in this particular section of the Bhagavatam, then Krishna is explaining to Uddhava about Vedic culture, and he's explaining about the different ways that things become impure and then how they become pure again in the material world. Because we have to understand this. When you get to back to the spiritual world, it doesn't matter. Just like in the spiritual world, Krishna only wears the same clothes once. Krishna gets dressed in the morning in his pastimes. He goes out and performs his pastimes. Right? And then he might go and take bath, right, while he's out herding the cows. He gets out again, he doesn't put on the same clothes. Right? Devotees bring fresh cloth and he puts on fresh cloth. Then he does his pastimes all day. Finally he gets back to Nandagram, right, where he milks the cows. Mother Yashoda helps him to take bath once again, he puts on fresh cloth. He never puts the same cloth on twice. Right? Even though nothing is impure, but he never puts the same cloth on twice. So in the spiritual world, nothing becomes contaminated, but in the material world it does. So therefore Krishna says in this section of the Bhagavatam, he teaches us how to cleanse things when you're in this material world. So in this particular verse, verse 14, which we've read, verses 12, 13 and 14, now it explains about how to cleanse the self. How to cleanse the self means how to cleanse the body, the mind, and the soul. Because the word Atma in Sanskrit can refer to all of these. How to keep the body clean, how to keep the mind clean, and how to keep the soul, our very essential nature, how to keep it clean. So it says here, the self can be cleansed by bathing. So this is first. Just like when we get up in the morning, what do we do? First thing you do when you get up in the morning, what do you do? Huh? Shall. Did you offer your obeisances to your guru yet? Huh? You did. Okay, so that's not the first thing you do. Okay, what's the first thing you do? Offer obeisances to your spiritual master. First thing you do, you get up. Offer obeisances to guru. Identify yourself as the eternal servant of your spiritual master. It mentions in the Shastra, one should not offer obeisances in your bed. You have to get off your bed or off your mattress, right, and on the floor. That might be a little austere. You might think, I'd rather be offering my obeisances under my doona in my bed, but that's not considered proper. So you get off the bed onto the cold floor, offer your obeisances. You have to do a bit of tapasya in spiritual life. Then what do you do? What's next? Very good. Make your bed. Yeah, very good. That's good. That's good. It means everything should be clean, orderly. That's good. And then, if you're sleeping on the floor, in the traditional system, just like if, I don't think many devotees sleep on the floor anymore. Hands up if you sleep on the floor. Okay, a few do. That's good. So if you sleep on the floor, then if the place is able to be cleansed, then you should cleanse it when you get up. If it is wood or marble or tiles or something that you can clean, carpet you can't clean because it's not possible. But if it's something that can be cleansed, then you should put water over that place like that. Then you go to the bathroom, and then what do we do? What do you guys do when you get up in the morning? I'm really interested to know. Because it sounds like none of you have got much idea of what you do. Or is everyone just too tired when you get up? Or?
It's not a favourite topic of discussion for the next few items.
What's that?
It's not a favourite topic of discussion for the next few items.
It may not be the favourite, but it is essential in Vaishnav achar or in Vaishnav etiquette. We must understand these things. It's part of the science of Bhakti Yoga, which is mentioned in the Hari Bhakti Vilas and so forth like that. So what is the next thing we do? Good talk. Yeah, very good. That's very good. Actually, in Ayurveda, if you are healthy, you should pass stool when you wake up. That's actually considered, that means the doshas in the body are balanced. Actually, like that. I remember I did not do that for many years. I did not know that I should be doing that, and I wasn't doing that. And then one devotee, Dr. Gupta, in Vrindavan, he gave me Ayurvedic medicine, and now my body does that when I wake up in the morning. He's balanced the doshas more. So when you get up in the morning, you should pass through, like that. And then we... Say it again. Very good. Cleanse the tongue and brush the teeth. Right? Cleanse the tongue. Like that. This is something we do in ISKCON and something people do in India and something people don't do all over the world. I mean, after you become a devotee, like, you can't even think about how you lived before you're a devotee. Like, can you imagine not scraping your tongue again? Well, it's unthinkable. So Prabhupada has taught us how to be human beings. I didn't even scrape my tongue for, you know, first half of my life. Now I cannot even think, you know. So we get up in the morning, scrape the tongue, right? Floss the teeth. If you floss, you should floss regularly if you don't floss every day. And brush the teeth properly. Then we take bath. Now, if you're a man, then you should shave before you take bath. Sometimes we see devotees take bath and then shave. Right? And we all laugh, but I've seen devotees do it. I've seen devotees have been devotees for a long time do it. It's impure. It's unclean. Because these things are part of the excretory system. Right? The hairs on the body are part of the excretory system. Right? It's an excretion of the body. Right? It's like something that the body is... rejecting or repulsing. It's impure. So then you go and take bath, and then you come and shave afterwards, then it's completely, you've just made yourself all impure again, like that. So this is why we follow properly. So we take bath, and then, what do we do next? Dry yourself. Because then the Tealak stays on better. No, actually, you get dressed first. You get dressed before you put Tealak on. Like that. First you get dressed. For men, you put on your kolpan, right, your dhoti. For madhijis, you put on your sari, right? And your petticoat, your sari, your choli, like that. Then you put the Tealak on. That's actually the order. Like that. You put the Tealak on properly. Right? And technically speaking, according to the Vaishnav Tantra, Pancharatrika Pradeep, Hari Bhakti Vilas, then you should do Archaman before you put on the Tilak. That's really paka. That should be done. Like that. Okay, then what do we do? Yeah, then we come to the temple. Right? Because you can't enter the temple till you've done all of this. Right? If you enter the temple in a contaminated state, Rupa Goswami says in the Nectar of Devotion, that is an aparad. It's an aparad to enter the temple in a contaminated state. So you have to understand what it means to be suci. Right? You have to wash your clothes every 24 hours. Right? You can only wear your cloth for 24 hours. You can't wear, Prabhupada says, if you take bath and then you put on cloth which is contaminated, he says it's like an elephant rolling in the mud. Right? The elephants go and take bath, and as soon as they come out, they roll in the mud. Right? To keep themselves cool. Right? But then Prabhupada said, you're just like an elephant. Right? You just took bath, you got yourself purified, and then you go and put on cloth which is not clean. So, if you're wearing cotton, because most of our dhotis and our saris and so forth, or many of them, are made of cotton. Cotton only remains pure for 24 hours. After 24 hours, it is apavitra. It is impure, right? So it must be washed. If you're wearing silk, right? If you wear silk onto the altar to wear the deities, if you do not contaminate the silk, it means if you do not eat while you're wearing your silk, if you do not pass stool or urine while you're wearing your silk, in other words, if it remains pure, then you can take your silk off and you can wear it the next day for worshipping the deities, because it's still considered pure. You can wear silk for 2 weeks. So that means from one Ekadashi to the next Ekadashi, you can wear your silk. And then after that, then you can purify it either in the sun or in water. Right? So that is silk's position, and is considered more pure than cotton. And then, wool is pavitra. Lamb's wool or sheep's wool is considered pavitra. So therefore wool does not become contaminated. But wool should not be worn on the altar. Right? It's described in the Shastra. Generally, unless it's very cold, then devotees should not wear wool onto the altar because its fibers will drop off, generally. Like that. They may contaminate the deity's paraphernalia. So we don't wear. So when you put your cloth on in the morning, you have to make sure your cloth is pure. So part of your cloth remaining pure is after you do your washing, right? Devotees should not put their cloth on the ground. You know, sometimes you see devotees, you know, that they go to the laundry, wash all the clothes, sometimes put it in the dryer or hang it out, put it in the basket, and then they walk in the ashram, throw it all on the floor, right, and then begin to fold it up, right? It's all contaminated. In India?
Wherever.
It may be done like that. I'm not sure what the system is in India. Generally I see, like in Mayapur, like Janani Vasparam and Pankajangrupa, it seems like they're right there. Everything's hung up like that. Doesn't seem like they dry things on the ground. Yeah, the Dobi Walla does. But it actually says that anything washed by a Dobi Walla is not considered pavitra. It should not be worn on the altar. Like that. Because Dobi Wallas are Shudra. So they're generally not clean. you find when they're folding everything up and everything, generally you won't find they're clean people like that. So everything should be kept very clean. Yeah. So when you do your washing and then you have to fold it up, generally what the standard which Brahmanas quite often follow, if Brahmanas, they quite often have a woolen chadar. Right? Woolen chadar gets you out of all sorts of problems. Right? You can put your woolen chadar out, like that, and then you can put your cloth there and you can fold it up and everything's pure. Like that. Or to say like you need to take some rest. And you don't want to, it's in the middle of the day, you don't want to get contaminated, you can't lay down in your bed because your bed's completely contaminated, you want to stay pure, you put out your woolen chadar, like that. I always carry one of these. Right? Saves my life. I love this guy. So this is how you get yourself out of all sorts of problems. Right? You have to know this system. Right? You have to know how to stay pure. Right? You see, Prabhupada in his pastimes, Prabhupada was always pure. Right? Prabhupada would not do things which would make him impure. Right? He'd always remain pure in all circumstances. Just like 1966 in New York, Prabhupada was in his room at the back of 26 Second Avenue. He had a little room up the top behind the courtyard. And Brahmananda and Gagamuni Prabhus, who were some of Prabhupada's first disciples, they went up there in the evening and Prabhupada was eating a banana. And they brought some Prabhupada some banana. He's having milk and banana in the evening. So Prabhupada got the banana with the holding with his right hand, because you never touch prasad with your left hand. Left hand is used for one thing, right? It is for cleansing your body after you've passed. Right? So it's impure, it's asuchi. That hand is always asuchi. Right? This hand is suchi. Use this for the pure things. So it's like whenever you give something to someone, you give it with the right hand or you receive it with the right hand. Right? You don't give anything with the left hand, you don't take it away. There's actually energies of prana which flows in the body and out of the body through the right hand, and the left hand has some sort of pranic contamination. It is not considered pure, the left hand. And it's actually said that if someone gives you money, Lakshmi, and you accept it in the left hand, you will lose it. Or if you give it in the left hand, that person will, it's inauspicious. So you always accept something and give something with the right hand. This is the system like that. So Prabhupada, he picked up the banana and with his right hand, and he peeled the banana with his teeth, right? And then he ate the banana, right? Would not touch the banana with the left hand, right? Because the banana is considered pure, like that. So therefore Prabhupada would showed us from the very beginning of his pastimes how to remain pure in all circumstances, right? Even when devotees, when you take prasad, you can't use the left hand. Just like Prabhupada would never, you know, sometimes see devotees pick up chapatis and rip them like that or something. If you want to break your chapati, then Prabhupada, and he taught us, then you put the chapati there, you fold it over, and then you break it with your right hand on the plate. You don't use the left hand when taking prasad. One exception is that Prabhupada would water, if he was taking water during a meal, he would sometimes, not always, but sometimes, pick it up with the left hand and what we call Brahmanism. Or drink it without touching the lips to the cup. Prabhupada would do like that. So maybe that is the exception. But generally, you always use the right hand. Especially when you're taking prasad. It is considered an offence to the prasad. I remember I went to one Gaudiya Mutt in Vrindavan a few years back. I was taking prasad there. And because I'm not, you know, trained as well as they are, then I was like, you know, changing my legs like this. You know, sometimes your legs get sore. So I was like changing my legs like this. And then, because I was taking prasad, I just moved the plate back slightly with my left hand. I just moved the plate back slightly and I changed my legs like that. And the sannyasi who was sitting opposite me, he was disgusted that I could even just move the plate with the left hand while taking prasad. And he said, this is Radha Kunja Biharis Mahaprasad. He said, how can you touch it with your left hand? And this is Malecha. is uncivilized, that you would even take with the left hand. So we have to understand these principles. So it says here that the body or the self can become cleansed by bathing. So we cleanse ourselves by taking bath. Right? Now when we take bath, it is said that we should finish the bath, even though now it's winter, so we have to bathe with warm water. So one should never bathe with hot water, because hot water is not good for the body. If it's too hot, then it will actually disturb the life there. So it's not good like that. So warm water is good, and then at the end, then you should finish with cold. Like at the end, since I became a devotee, I was taught this, then at the end, you just turn the cold tap on and just let the cold water purify. Because it purifies the subtle body. Right? It wakes you up. Right? And then you won't sleep so much in the Bhagavatam class. So this is the system. So when you take bath, then you should bathe with cool water at the end. Like that. Right? So it says here that the self can be cleansed by bathing, and then secondly it says by charity. Right? We cleanse our mind by charity. Right? Especially for grihasthas, this is their dharma. Dharma means their religious principle. A grihastha must give charity. If a grihastha doesn't give charity, it becomes miserly. Kripana. Right? Kripana means, right? Miserly person wants to keep everything for herself, or it is mine. It is my money. It is my possession. It is like this. Right? And then it is not the nature of the soul. Right? It is not the nature of the soul to be like that. The nature of the soul is to be very munificent, very giving. Right? So it purifies the consciousness by giving charity. So devotees should give charity, especially the grihasthas. Right? And then austerity, tapasya, purifies the consciousness. Devotees have to perform austerity. Right? Best austerity is to preach Krishna consciousness. Best austerity is to spread Krishna consciousness. Best austerity is to serve Radha Vallabha. We don't have to do artificial austerity. Just like when I was a young brahmachari, we used to do austerity, which is good. It's good when you join. I couldn't do it now, but I used to do it. We went down to Tasmania in May, which is around about now. You know how cold it is now? If you go to Tasmania, it's really cold. So we were down there, and we only took cold baths. No hot water. Because we were young brahmacharis, very snotch. Which is good, because it helps to make the mind strong, powerful. So I was in Tasmania, and we're having cold baths for 3 weeks. And then I came back to Melbourne, and because it was really cold down there. And then I went into the brahmachari ashram, into the showers, and I turned on the cold tap. And we got under it, and I thought, oh, I must have turned the warm tap on. And then I got out, and then it was the cold tap. Because it was so cold down there, when I got here, the cold water here felt like it was warm. So this is called tapasya. Tapasya purifies the consciousness. We should perform tapasya for Krishna. You have to do sense control. You have to do austerity. But it must be done for the pleasure of Krishna. Sometimes devotees do austerity, but it's not for Krishna's pleasure. Right? It's just for their ego or for their whatever it is for. They do so much austerity, but then that the result of doing too much austerity on the path of bhakti is that the heart will become hard. Right? You become very proud and your heart becomes very hard and you're doing austerity, but it's not actually what we're meant to do. Right? Devotees are meant to do tapasya for the pleasure of Krishna. So what is our tapasya? Our tapasya is we get up early in the morning, we take bath, all the things we just spoke about. Right? And then by the time you get to the temple, you've done that tapasya for Krishna's pleasure. Right? And then Krishna is satisfied. That is the point. Right? We go and spread Krishna consciousness. We go and preach. We maintain the temple. Right? Maintaining the temple for year after year after year after year. Just like Aniruddha Prabhu and Achintarupa Manaji have done. For year after year after year. Maintaining the temple. That's a tapasya. But it's done for Krishna's pleasure. Right? And that's how we become purified. Right? And then it says, the self can be cleansed by age. So that means that if you can be a devotee for a long period of time, which is difficult, You don't see a lot of senior devotees around because they find it hard to maintain. Devotees find it hard to be devotees for years and years and years on end. But if you can do that, then if you're very strict in your following the practices of Krishna consciousness, then as you get older, automatically you become purified just by age. When you become older, you become more purified. If you're following the process properly, like that. Your mind doesn't give you as many problems as you get older. Because if you're intelligent and if you've worked life out a little bit, when we're young, we get disturbed by so many little things. Like when you're a young devotee, you know, I remember when I was a new devotee and there were other bhaktas in the ashram, right? I was just a new devotee, they were new devotees, and we used to argue about everything. We would argue about everything. You know, someone would get in the Crossways van and I was like, you know, you can't get in the Crossways van that way. You know, you've got to put your right foot in first. I didn't actually say that, but I mean, we used to argue about stupid things, you know. And now that I'm older, you know, sometimes I see devotees do things which are not proper. Usually, if we see devotees not doing things which are not proper, then we tell them, just like if they're eating prasadam standing up. Right? It's actually an offence to prasadam to eat while you're standing. So sometimes we say to devotees, don't stand, sit down. It's an offence to prasadam to eat when your shoes are on. So sometimes we say, take your shoes off, sit down and honour prasadam. Like that. So sometimes we say these things. But then other little things sometimes see devotees doing which aren't proper. But it's not that we just jump on everyone all the time. You get a little bit older and you relax a little bit. A little bit. You have to relax a little bit. What's that?
You get older and relax more.
Yeah, as you get older, you relax more. But on the other side, then it's the duty of the older devotees to correct the senior devotees. Junior devotees. So then it becomes like a bit of an austerity because you just want to relax, but you see everyone doing things which aren't right, so then you have to constantly correct them. That's like Dave and Rita Swami, he said to me, a couple of times he said to me, he said, it's not easy being a guru. Because all day you just have to correct everyone. Are you doing this wrong? You're doing that wrong? You're doing that wrong, right? It's not actually that pleasant to do that, but then that's your service, so you have to do it like that. But by age you become purified. And then ultimately, as this verse teaches us, ultimately, the way that we become purified is by remembering Krishna. That's how we ultimately become purified. Right? That purifies everything in the consciousness. Why was Prabhupada so pure? Prabhupada said, I never remember a time when I did not remember Krishna. I never remembered a time. Right? Always thinking of Krishna. Prabhupada was 3 years old. He used to go and stand in front of the deities of Radha Govinda in Kolkata, right, for hours on end. Right? Do you see any 3-year-old kids doing that? Do you see any 30-year-old kids doing that? Most of us don't even look at the deities. See devotees, they come in off a basis to Prabhupada, sometimes don't even look at him, going off a basis to Gaudiya, don't even look at them, off a basis to Radha Balabha, don't even look at them. Offer a basis to the Jagannath, Balaram, Subhaja, don't even look at them. Get the Charanamrita, which is what we're after. Right? Offer a basis and go upstairs for prasadam. Right? So you can do like that. But that doesn't purify the consciousness. Purification of the consciousness takes place when you remember Krishna. So you have to become conscious of Krishna. That's what we're here for. Right? If you go outside and you stand on the other side of the road and you look up towards this building and you'll see up on the wall, what does it say? International Society for Krishna Consciousness. So you have to understand when you walk in the gates what it is we're doing here. We're meant to be remembering Krishna. Rupa Goswami says, always remember Krishna and never forget Krishna. That's the whole point. That's what makes you pure. That is purity, actually. Because other things may or may not be there, but we should be clean and we should follow all these things. But even if they're not there for some reason, but if we're remembering Krishna, then everything is pure. Just like when I went to Jagannath Puri for the first time in 1994 with Mother Jagatarini. And then we went in front of the deity of Tota Gopinath, which is the deity where Mahaprabhu physically left this world. He entered into that deity. So it's one of the most important deities in our Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya. So Mataji, she taught us, she said, when you come before Tota Gopinath, you have to take darshan for a long time. We don't go in front of the deity and just, oh, very nice, and then just, you have to stay there for a long time. Why? Because you have to remember Krishna. You have to connect with Krishna. Krishna is personally standing there in front of you. These deities are not ordinary deities. Radha Balarama are not ordinary deities. Gaunitai and Jagannath Balarama and Subhadra, they're not ordinary deities. These deities are incredibly powerful, and you have to spend time with them regularly. Spend time with them. Just come and just sit with them and just chant with them and meditate on them. Krishna is direct, and that's how you become Krishna conscious. Why do you think Prabhupada installed them here? Prabhupada installed them here just so we can take their prasadam. Is that the whole purpose? Is that why they're here? No, there's more to it than that. No. So ultimately we become pure by remembering Krishna. So it says here there are many ways to become pure. In these next few verses, then Krishna will teach you about all the different ways to purify ourselves according to Vedic culture. But ultimately, it all comes down to remembering Krishna. That's why we do everything we do. Just like when you... there's so many things that we do. All the little things we do is to help us remember Krishna. So we'll stop here, and we'll see if there's any questions or comments on what we discussed. The wool and chatter. You wash the wool and chatter when it becomes marked by something. Like if you get a mark on it, like some prasadam or something sticks on it, then you can wash it, like wash that part, or you can wash the whole thing. So it means that, you know, if it gets something, if it's getting dirty or some dirt gets on it or something, you should wash it, keep it clean. There shouldn't be any marks on it. Cloth is considered impure when there's marks on the cloth. Just like you see the dirty becomes grimy or something like that. Either wash it and cleanse it or reject it. Right? Especially if you're worshipping the deity. Right? Then it's not considered pure. So it means all our cloth, if it becomes starts to become contaminated. Cloth should never have a mark on it. You look at someone's cotton or their silk or their wool, should not have any marks. If it does, either clean it or you have to reject it. That's the highest standard. You have to speak with
dry cleaning.
Dry cleaning? What sort of stuff?
Like the wood stuff, can they use like some chemicals or something?
Best to avoid the chemicals, that's the point. Best to avoid the chemicals. Better to use natural things as opposed to chemicals. The chemicals are not good for you. Like that. Generally, just like you see all the chemicals these days? You know, the bottles, it says do not swallow. Right? It says if you swallow, immediately seek medical advice. Drink lots of water and immediately seek medical advice. Because all the chemicals have too much of the fire element in it. So when they go in your eyes or they go in there, they burn you. So the chemicals are not healthy. They're not natural. They're like a man-made thing of doing things more quickly. Thousands of years we didn't have chemicals. The world was fine. No one died because we didn't have chemicals. Now suddenly we've got chemicals and the world's so good, but now everyone's getting cancer and all these things from the chemicals. Like that. So best to avoid, if you can. You can use dry, don't have to be fanatical. You can use dry cleaning, but generally you may not need to. It's okay. Yeah, generally when Rupa Goswami is speaking these things in the Nectar Devotion, it means in the temple room itself, the altar room. I suppose this is called the Kirtan Mandap. This is where we do Kirtan. This is the Kirtan Hall. That's actually, or the Darshan Hall, that's actually the altar. So you should not go into that area if you're not pure. You should not be impure when you come into this area. But, like as you say, you know, sometimes devotees go to work all day, they come to the temple then, like that. At least... Prabhupada says, by chanting Hare Krishna, then you become purified. So purify your consciousness, then come into the temple room. As much as possible, be clean. So, any other question, comment?
How many for someone have they left handed?
In the Vedic times, if someone was left handed, they would teach them to be right handed. That was the Vedic system. These days, you know, you didn't get taught like that, so now you're older. But it means when you take prasad and all these things, you should take with right hand. When you worship the deity, you should use right hand, like that. But maybe when you're writing, then maybe use left hand. Because in the Vedic time, they would train the child from young to be right hand, even if it's not natural. But because we did not grow up like that, then maybe we write with left hand, that's okay. But when you take prasad or worship deity, you should use right hand. Is it okay?
Yes.
Any other question?
You're talking about spending time with the deities. I remember hearing about for beginning devotees not to spend too much time with the deities because you can get familiar.
I don't know which sampradaya this comes from. I've never heard like that.
Like with a spiritual master, like not to spend so much time to the point where you do get
Chanakya Pandit says one should not come too close to the guru or too far from the guru. Right? Because if you come too close to the guru, like I remember many times with my spiritual master, I came too close and he was like, "What are you doing?" One time he finished class after evening class and we walked upstairs with him, we're talking with him, and then he went to walk in his room and then I just followed him into his room. He just turned around and said, "What are you doing?" I was just like, and you know, moved out of the room. So this means we should not come too close to the guru and not too far from the guru either. Like that. So you should means have to be intelligent. Not to be too close, not to be too far. So with the deity, same thing. But it means that, I honestly don't understand the concept. I mean, you should be spending as much time as you can with Radha Balabha. So I don't see what the harm is. If you're chanting Hare Krishna in front of Radha Balabha, where's the, you know, how are you going to be becoming over familiar or like that? It means that if you're a pujari, you should not become over familiar. It means you should not let the standards drop. Oh, you know, I'm worshipping them every day, I'm their intimate servant, I'm so close to them now, I don't have to take bath. Right? And you might think it's a joke, but if you're asking Sringa Kavacha Prabhu, who is the ISKCON minister for deity worship, it's not a joke. Right? There are devotees who do it. They get into this conscious, oh, I'm worshipping the deity, I can just get up in the morning and just like flick some water and they do it, and it's nonsense. Like that. So that's what it means. But it doesn't mean in terms of, you know, sitting in front of them chanting, you can do that all day. Except when they ask you to do some service. Right? And how do you know they're asking you to do some service? Because the temple authorities are asking you on their behalf. Right? So they say to you, go to Crossways. So it doesn't mean you say, well, I can't go to Crossways, I'm too attached to Radha Balabha. Right? If you're actually attached to Radha Balabha, you'll serve their mission. That's how it. And then when you come back, you'll get so much more reciprocation from them. But you should spend as much time as you can with them. Any other points? Prabhupada said you have to read Krishna book before you go to bed. And Prabhupada said if you read Krishna book before you go to bed, you'll dream of Krishna. So you can't just chant Hare Krishna. I mean, you can just chant Hare Krishna, but most of us are not advanced enough to just chant Hare Krishna. Therefore, we need Shravanam and Kirtanam. So you should read Krishna book 1 hour every day and chant 16 rounds, 2 hours every day, right? And that should make you positively begin to remember Krishna. So all day when you're at Coles and you're packing all the apples onto the shelf, right? Then in your mind you can think, I'm in Vrindavan and I've just gone and picked all of these apples for Radha and Krishna, and now I'm just storing them in one of the thatched cottage huts in Vrindavan, waiting for them to call so that we can make some apple chutney. Right, that's what you're supposed to be doing. So then it's not so difficult. And then when your boss walks in, you can say, my dear Manjari. Is it okay? Any other questions? Any other question, comment? Okay, Srila Prabhupada Ki.